I'd like to reconvene the Marine Resources Commission September meeting. We're going to deviate from the agenda just a little bit at the present time. I'd like to pass the gavel down. Mr. Holland. Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, as you know, several months ago there was a change of command ceremony that was presided over by former Commissioner Pruitt. Did a wonderful job, and as is customary, we always present our valued and dedicated former employees with a certificate of appreciation. And today, former Commissioner, now private sector, hard-working individual, Bill Pruitt is here with us today, so if Bill would come forward, I'd like to present him with a certificate. Commissioner Pruitt.
Yes, Commissioner Bowen.
Commissioner Bowen, before you start, I've waited a long time for this, and I have something to say. Mr. Pruitt, would you raise your right hand and swear to tell the whole truth?
Well,
go ahead.
I could go on and on and on about the wonderful things Commissioner Pruitt did while he was here. He's been an inspiration to me. He's touched the lives of so many people, been good to the employees. I can tell you, being where I sit now, I sure do miss you a lot. And before the day's out, I think I'm going to miss you even more. But anyway. But in all sincerity, Marine Resources Commission hereby recognizes William A. Pruitt. Be it known through your 23 and a half years of dedicated and loyal service as Commissioner of Marine Resources, you work conscientiously on behalf of the Commonwealth's Marine Resources, exemplified through the Commission's declaration to balance recreational and commercial fishing and the protection of the habitat of the Chesapeake Bay and its tributaries. Your heartfelt devotion, professionalism, and knowledge of the seafood industry enabled your colleagues on the Commission and your employees at the agency to work more effectively and with a greater sense of assurance in the arduous task of protecting Virginia's marine resources for present and future generations. You brought wisdom and an important sense of duty, responsibility, and commitment to your work. You are a true Virginia gentleman whose love for and faith in the Commonwealth and its people motivated your actions. On behalf of the members, employees, and friends of the Commission, I am pleased to recognize you for distinguished service and, more importantly, loyalty, given under my hand and the seal of the Marine Resources Commission this 31st day of October 2006 and the 231st year of the Commonwealth. Commissioner Pruitt, congratulations, sir.
Thank you, Commissioner Bowman. I appreciate that very much. Mr. Tankard and Dr. McConaughey, of course, John knows me and the rest of the commission members. I've said this many times in the last several years, but the governor made the right decision, and I made the right decision 14 years ago, almost 15 years ago, when he was chief deputy of Isle of Wight County. And I showed then, JT, that I don't have any insecurities. He was taller than me, younger than me, better looking than me, and certainly smarter, and is doing a better job, Ernie. You're right. I have just seen that. I feel that way about him. He's
you
like
sure have failed a lot in the last 4 months.
He told me, he said, please don't get up there now and say I'm like a son to you. Reserve that for Jack. So I'm not going to do that, but he is. He's like a younger brother to me. And I really am proud of him. And I'm also thankful to the Lord for healing him. And he has healed him. Members of the commission, you have a great staff of people here. They are wonderful ladies and gentlemen. I'm so glad so many of them are here today. They're great people. They have a hard job to do, dealing with the public every day. It's not easy. And I'm proud of them, and you all are doing a great job. This is a great commission. John, you and Dr. McConaughey, you and Mr. Tankard have joined a good group here. They're fine people. And with that, thank you very much, and I'll go back to consulting.
Anybody else you want to put under oath, Mr. Holland?
That's all right now.
Can I have some questions, JT, if that works?
The next item on the agenda is public comments. This is a time where there are not items specifically on the agenda to be addressed. The public has an opportunity to let us know what's going on and what's on their mind. So with that, the floor is open. Yes, sir. Come forward, please. You state your name and who you represent.
Thank you, Commissioner Bowman. I'm Ellis W. James from Norfolk, and I happen to be the Sierra Club observer here.
Mr. James, good to have you here. I've noticed your presence at the meetings a number of times. I've enjoyed the comments and dialogue we have. Pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. I'd like to, first of all, congratulate the members of the commission for the action that you've taken just prior to us taking a break. The briefing this morning by Chip was an extremely important item, in my opinion. And I think at this stage, the storm warning should be up and flying strongly about this issue. And so I hope that the various groups that will be brought together to study this situation will really take this matter seriously. I happen to agree with the attorney this morning when he said this is not a laughing matter. He was disturbed. But the fact of the matter was that some of the things that we saw this morning during the briefing were disturbing, and I think part of that laughter was nervous laughter. I would like to suggest that this question has three or four major areas of concern, and they have been duly noted in the briefing that was given before we started this break. But the question of gray water and the whole issue of contamination of our streams and tributaries, as well as the impact that will apparently grow if this problem continues to spread on the Chesapeake Bay, is going to be a very, very serious matter. And although I understand that Broad Creek is the focus of our attention right now, the implications for serious damage to our waterways and to our water quality is on the horizon. I hope that the voices at the table will always do as they've done in the past, keep in mind the watermen, the potential damage to the shellfish industry that is so critical, that I know this commission takes note of very seriously, and also the question of people who live along areas such as Broad Creek, who are quite concerned about what aqua lodges imply. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, and I really appreciate the discussion and briefing that you had this morning. It was extremely important.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. James. Always appreciated. Anyone else? Public comment? Come forward, sir. Mr. Jenkins, Twin River Watermen's Association. Thank you so much for the card, Doug. I really greatly appreciate it during my little difficult time. Greatly appreciate it.
Glad you're doing well.
Thank you all very much.
Doug Jenkins, representing Twin River Watermen Association. I have a couple things of concern to us. One is I think the Nominee area should be closed now to hand dredging. Most of the oysters are harvested in that area now. There are some small oysters left, and I think it would do more harm working on those small ones. They would be better off left there, and maybe if Jack and Jim would come up with some kind of a plan to start putting more seed in that area now. If it was closed to hand dredging, it would probably be better in several ways. There would be a fall planting. We did that years ago, and it seemed like the arches would establish themselves and grow quicker during the fall and spring and summer. And also, I think it would be less detrimental from the Carino rays, because they would, if it was any damaged arches, it wouldn't track them to that area. That's one request. Another thing would be, we still like to see Yokomica and Cone, where the beds has been there closed for a number of years, just sitting there. The wardman need to work those areas if no more than 2 or 3 weeks during December, then close it down. It's disturbing to see public bottom closed for the reason of the private planters, and that's wrong. It shouldn't be that way. The Baylor Survey was set aside for the public to have arched, and when the excuse is that because private planters have ground in those surrounding areas, that it's chances that watermen may work on the private beds. We have other public ground that's open now and has been open and always will be open, that private ground is around it. But to take those areas and keep them closed for that purpose is wrong. I'm just asking for it again. I don't know what y'all... last time it was pretty close vote, but I want to throw that out to you, and appreciate whatever you can do on that end.
Thank you, Doug. You make a lot of good points, and I understand where you're coming from. I'd like for Dr. Wesson to honor Mr. Jenkins by responding to at least his comments or request, either Mr. Travelstead or Dr. Wesson, one or the other.
The nomini, we could close it if you want. I mean,
how does that figure into your management plan? I mean, very seldom do I hear people coming here and ask for places to be closed. I mean,
it doesn't change any of the rest of it. It's just that area's been, we put seed there to be harvested, and it's been harvested. If I don't think very many people are working on it right now. I think it's just one or two boats on occasional days are working there now. It's pretty much stopped on its own. And the other areas are still the same arguments that it was before. They're just very small areas that have the little bit of brood stock that we have for hopefully replenishing them in the future. We saw a bit of spat set this year that presumably came from them, and hopefully, if the conditions are right and salinity stays up in that area, we could see spawning from them again. So,
any comments from the commission? Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have one question for Jim. In the nomini, is there some abundance of subadult oysters that would be protected by closing it right now? I mean, would that be the main reason for closing that?
There was so much loss to the rays in those areas and the rays worked more heavily on the smaller ones, so that I don't think there would be a whole lot of benefit to closing it. It's not an area that you're ever going to see any spats. That is too far up the river below where oysters ever spawn. So it's just a grow-out area for seed.
So that is to say that what's there now is simply there for the purpose of
put-and-take fishery.
Yep. Right.
Mr. Bowden.
I guess more of a comment than it is a question. I'm not familiar with the nomini, but we had a very good spat set in Deep Creek area on the eastern shore a number of years ago. And what happened then was it should have been closed after a short period of time, because people stayed there and ground and ground and ground till they killed everything. I mean, they were bringing up a dredge solid full of small oysters to keep 3 and 4 oysters out of it. And you do that day in, day out, you're just wasting a resource. And, Doug's a lot more familiar, and certainly you are, with nomini. Is that something that could be occurring there also?
there are other areas where dredge is going on right now that is probably occurring more. But because these oysters were moved out, we're not talking about a spat set that's being dragged around. These are actually small oysters. It'd be fine to close it if we want to close it. It is not, since they've already quit up there, it's not as worrisome as some of the other areas where they're still dredging pretty hard for similar quantities of oysters.
Do you feel like that would be a good idea to bring those other areas to the attention of the commission if there's a problem in those areas that you think are more intense than the problems there to address also?
Well, they may come up here in public comments, but
all right. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Wesson. Any other public comments? Mr. Jenkins. Good afternoon, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Pleasure as always.
Members of the board, my name is Lionel Jenkins, and I'm representing myself here today, not the association. I'm here today. I've talked to a lot of men in my area. As you all know, the James River has been, it's almost a graveyard from Jay Lollett on down. There's oysters in the upper James, and the Tongas is catching some oysters. The buyers are having problems with them. They are snappy oysters, you know, and they don't want to buy them, but they have to because there is no other oysters anyplace else. I called Mr. Weston two or three days ago and asked him. I had heard that they had had a meeting and was going to talking about opening the Lower Rappahannock. He told me no, they had no meeting. That the board was going to meet today, and some people was going to address the board about opening the Lower Rappahannock River. So I was under the impression that some of the oyster buyers were going to be here, but I don't see any. But anyway, I'm here, and I'm here to ask the board to consider opening at least some of the Lower Rappahannock River, because there are people that use these waterways for their livelihood, and they really need to go to work. Now, I asked Jim, you know, if they were going to open it, and he said no, and I'm sure that he's opposed to opening the Rappahannock. He's been that way ever since they closed it. Now, we've sat in meetings for several years and talked about this thing, and always the commission board has always gone back and relied on what evidence that they could retrieve from VIMS and from other organizations. But I believe that the time has come that the commission should consider the will of the people, you know, in at least a small way, you know, that we've been down here for 10 or 15 years, and we butted our head against the wall, and we have, every time we come to the board, we lose something, you know. And I know how important the oysters is to the livelihood of the people, and I also know how important they are to the economy, as well as just the people that catch these oysters. And I know what they can do for the bay and the filters and cleaning the bay and stuff like this. You know, this is a different situation. But I would like to recommend to the board to consider opening the Rappahannock River, the Lower Rappahannock, if not all, at least some parts of it, if not this month, the 1st of November, December. And then they can monitor the river, you know, and if it gets to the point that they see fit to cut it off, they can cut it off at any time they so please. This is what I propose to the board.
Let me throw this out. Jack?
Yes, sir.
You know, this is the first real cut that I as commissioner have had at this very, very important issue. And I indicated during my selection process that I was dedicated to obtaining the best science and making the decisions that I could or that come before this commission. Certainly, we don't want to put ourselves in a position where we not only imperil but maybe eliminate our brood stock. I'm sat on the other side of the table for going on 15 years and understand that. But I also understand that dynamics and certain things change over the years as far as what's going on, what type of, and I know we do stock assessments, we do this, but at the same time, Mr. Jenkins brought up a very important concept, and that is that we do address the will of the people that we represent. And that is certainly both the working watermen and those involved in conservation. I don't think that there would be any harm if you think that the workload could handle it, that we examine what they've requested and ask VIMS, ask the stakeholders involved, because the other stakeholders here at this public hearing are not, we don't have everybody to address because there's more than one side to it, and the people are the people. And I do not want, by any means, by suggesting this, give any false hope or false expectation. I think what happened was in the James River, Mother Nature did one of two things in the last couple of years. She either gave us false hope, but on the other hand, if you look at it, she gave us bounty for a couple of years. But by doing so, we maybe developed a little false hope that things would continue. And of course, our representative at VIMS forewarned us that what we're seeing today was foretold. Having said that, I'm going to put the matter before the commission for discussion, but I don't believe that we should shut the door and just blatantly say no. But at the same time, I'd like to have the best science available. And they've asked for it in December, which gives us a month to maybe to look at it. I'd like to hear your comments on that, if I could.
This is Mr. Jenkins' request to open the Lower Rappahannock is, I guess, the fourth time we've heard that request in 3 years. And each time the commission has held a public hearing on that issue and heard from a variety of sources, including staff, the Virginia Institute of Marine Science, members of the public, the watermen, processors, environmental groups. And thus far, each time you've decided to keep it closed. Right now, we have a Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel that is looking at a number of oyster issues in the broadest possible sense. And certainly one of the issues they will be discussing, certainly before they finish their work, will be the issue of sanctuaries and what value they serve, if any, and whether they should be maintained or modified or done away with altogether. And I understand the situation the watermen are in. I mean, but quite frankly, the situation we find them in this year is really no different than the situation they were in just 3 years ago, 4, 5, 6, even 10 years ago. And it's unfortunate in one way that we had such good seasons back-to-back the last 2 years, and I think there was a lot of hope that, you know, that kind of season would continue this year, as you've noted, and unfortunately it hasn't. But staff has no problem with another round of a hearing on this and continuing debate. I just have some concern that we don't get too far out in front of the Blue Ribbon Panel. The Blue Ribbon Panel, incidentally, will be meeting on November 8th up at VIMS, and we can certainly put this item on the agenda to at least begin discussion of that issue. I don't know that that group would be able to complete their discussions and come to any conclusion that quickly, but you know they certainly could get those kind of discussions underway. But again, I think it would be important to hear not only from the watermen at your November meeting, but Virginia Institute of Marine Science and all the others who have commented on this issue.
And we would have to put it through the public hearing process because it's being asked for in December. It's not an emergency or whatever.
Yeah.
It's tough. I mean, I fear
One thing that staff is working on, just for the commission's benefit, is a straw man proposal that we will take to the Blue Ribbon panel that presents in concept how the commission should go about oyster restoration and whether we should be concerned entirely with environmental restoration or ecological restoration versus restoration of the industry, or at least maintenance of the industry and its infrastructure, the watermen and the processors. And, you know, is there a balance or a mix in there? And we hope to present sort of that straw man at the next meeting. And, you know, I think ultimately what will come out of the Blue Ribbon panel is some agreement, some decision that the state does have an obligation to help maintain its industry. It's not all just about ecological restoration. It is as much, equally so, about trying to keep the watermen in business and the industry alive until we get this thing figured out down the road. And if that means having to spend our money in that fashion, that's fine. We should let the public know up front, you know, this amount of money that's being spent is not meant for ecological restoration. It's meant to develop a put-and-take fishery to keep the fishermen in business. No hidden agenda at all. Right up front, we should be telling people about it. And that, you know, that those kinds of decisions might affect how we treat the Lower Rappahannock River and, you know, what we call the sanctuary.
Well, I know that y'all have done a lot of hard work. I sat in on the last meeting, and unfortunately we'll not be able to make the November the 8th meeting. I just want to make sure that all of the areas are covered. That's, you know, I leave here in the evening, and it's not like just go home and forget about what went on. I mean, I take their plight very seriously, and on the other hand, I take the plight of conservation very seriously. Public trust doctrine is not something that's cut and dried. It's really, you got to weave your way through it and to do the best you can for all that are involved. And I just want to make sure especially the concerns about the sanctuaries that you and I have discussed are addressed.
I guess my last word on this is I don't want the watermen. Suppose you hold a public hearing next month on this issue of the Lower Rappahannock and you once again decide to not do anything with it, leave it there. I don't want that to be the final say on that issue, because the Blue Ribbon panel may ultimately come out with recommendations on a number of issues, one of which is how we treat sanctuaries. They may finish their work in January or February of next year, and we could be back here in the spring talking about an entirely new program as to how we restore the oyster and the industry. And it could be substantially different from a decision you make in November.
Okay. Any comments by commission members?
I've got a question. How many acres are we talking about that's in the sanctuary of the horses?
In the Lower Rappahannock?
Yeah.
Acres?
It's a big area. It's thousands of acres, but
there's
not thousands of acres of horse bottom.
Well, roughly how many acres of horse bottom do we have? Roughly.
We monitor about 150, but there's probably twice that much when you count the little teeny places.
Basically, it's 150 of good oyster bottom. Is that what we're saying? Okay.
Can I comment on that? Doug Jenkins and Coins and Ears are getting ready to go out on tomorrow.
Yes, right. We got scheduled. Mark Mathew getting in touch with you, Jack?
Yes. Well, they're going out in the near future to do a survey of the Rappahannock. Whether they do a survey of the whole river, I don't know. But I was in the Blue River Arsenal meeting 2 months ago. Dr. Mann spoke about an hour on his findings of the reefs and the set-aside areas. And maybe I didn't get it all like I should have, because I'm kind of slow. But my concept was, when I came away from that meeting, was, and he made the comment himself, he said He had been doing this for 15 years. And he apologized. He said he was ashamed of himself because he had never sat down and did the math to figure out what was happening. And he told the Blue Ribbon panel, and Jim was there, and some more people. But anyway, he told the people, and he said, there comes a time when you have to sit down and to weigh the cost, whether you can get a dollar back for a dollar you spend. And he said, folks, I'm ashamed to tell you, but I believe the time is now. He said, nothing you have done has done one iota of good. He said, you got a reef, they spawn arsenic, they drift off to 150, 200 yards away, and they die. All you got is what you got on the reef. Your production is dying as fast as you produce it. This is what he said. These people heard it. Now, what they did about it, I don't know. I wasn't at the last one. But anyway, you know, I thank
him. He made some clarifying comments, but I'm not going to speak for Dr. Mann right. Since he's not here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jenkins. Anyone else on the subject? Mr. Kellum. Good to have you here, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Pleasure.
Mr. Bowman, I have an alternate proposal that I'd like to offer on opening Lower Rappahannock. I had a copy for each commissioner.
I'll tell you what. Do you have an extra one for Mr. Travel said by chance?
I don't.
Okay. You can hand it to Jack and Mr. Josephson, and I'll share.
Mr. Bowman,
that's right.
Members of the commission, I'm Tommy Kellum with W. Kellum Seafood in Weems, Virginia. In 1999, as most of us know, the Virginia Oyster Heritage Foundation was formed primarily as a collaboration between federal, state, and industry partners to put in place a restoration plan that started with the Rappahannock River. Governor Gilmore put together this team, and Secretary Woodley oversaw it through VMRC. I was on that original panel, and the original plan, which I've given you a copy of, was a very good plan. The idea was to set aside sanctuary areas and primary Baylor bottom, which is bottom that is of production, and around these sanctuary areas we would have harvestable two-dimensional shell plantings, the idea being that the recruitment from the sanctuary reefs would settle out on the harvest areas, and we would harvest those oysters and leave the sanctuaries set aside. It was a great plan, I thought, and we put that in place. A lot of work. The Corps of Engineers was involved. I believe that was their initial involvement with the restoration projects that they're still currently involved with. In the beginning, Commissioner Pruitt asked myself, as well as a member of Department of Environmental Quality, to go into the Virginia Watermen's Association and sell this plan. And I can promise you that wasn't one of the best evenings I ever spent. We went in with an idea that we're going to take primary Baylor bottom, pull out sanctuary areas, and do these harvest areas around it. At that time, best recollection, the river had been, the Lower Rappahannock had been closed for about 7 years for harvest at that time. I bought in. I still think it was the right thing to do. We set aside brood stock in that area, and I believe to a degree it worked. But I also believe that the time has come that we probably need to look at a plan to reopen some of these harvest areas. The Middle Rappahannock has been open for a number of years now, six. And in our last Shellfish Advisory Committee, we went over the fact that for the past 5 years, we've intentionally left these areas closed to prove that the areas that we harvesting were not adversely affected from harvesting, and the areas that we were setting aside for sanctuaries were not coming up with dramatic numbers in comparison to those that we were harvesting. In this time that the Middle Rappahannock's been open, year after year, including this year, that area provides, or actually, the biomass has increased in these areas as far as smaller non-market size oysters. Of course, the reason being we've continually harvested the market oysters year after year after year off of these. I went out last week with some of our boats that are working in that area. When a dredge comes up, it'll come up solid full of oysters that are about 2.5 inches, which with three being the size. The dredge licks that I counted, it was 10 to 12 market oysters per lick. We do not have a problem with the amount of oysters that are there. It's just the fact that we're continually working the same areas, pulling the markets out. So when you look at the overall population of oysters there, the biomass is there, but the market size oysters aren't. And I believe that's from continually working through the oysters and pulling the markets out. One thing that came into play this year is when the Lord James season opened up and it was all dead, most of the boats left the Lower James and went to the Rappahannock to work. We've got more boats at our company that private watermen fishing than we've had in probably 25 years. A third, or probably half of that fleet is Tangier fleet. The remaining are from watermen scattered throughout the bay, Middle Bay, Lower Bay area. I have put together a proposal. I guess it's a middle of the road that the watermen wouldn't agree with, and then it's on the other side of one thinking that it all should be closed. Basically, what I did was took a line down the middle of the Rappahannock River from an enforceable limit that would be a red buoy that sits in the mouth of the river. It's on the map that's in the first map that you guys have, shooting a line straight to the center span of the Robert O. Norris Bridge. Everything to the left would be open, facing upriver. Everything to the right would be closed. The sanctuary reefs in that area would, I assume, come under the same codes that we enforce for all sanctuary reefs. They would be protected areas. So we would not harvest in or around the sanctuary reefs. One thing that probably wouldn't set well with watermen, I also excluded the area outside of the mouth there that's on your map. It's an area called Spikes. This is an area we've pulled broodstock from in the past and relocated to other areas of the bay. My proposal would leave that area closed so that we left that population alone. What I would like to ask for is that the season open up November 1st, be open through the end of November with the commission reconsidering at its November meeting whether to extend it through the end of December. At that time, I think the area in the Rappahannock that's open for hand scrape harvest now should be closed and stay closed while the other area is open. The proposal, it's like I say, a middle of the road proposal that I offer somewhere between the watermen and the folks that think it should stay closed. The reason for the need for the opening right now is twofold. From a processor side, which is where I come from, the state of Louisiana, where in the past we have imported as much as 50% of the product that was processed in Virginia, elected to keep their season. Their season came in September 1st. It closed September 30th and will not reopen until November 13th. The state of Texas was slated to have an opening that began November 1st. Because of all the rain flow and weather conditions that they've had, only about a third of their harvest areas are going to open until pending water samples come back, which in the past has been 2 to 3 weeks. We're pulling product out of Maryland right now, but it's not enough to cover the needs of the processors in Virginia. We're looking at a window of November Thanksgiving orders, which we'll do 40% of our volume in our company. November, we'll do another 25 to 30% in December. So 70% of our volume is done in this two-month window that we're looking at a lack of product. In the overall scheme of things, the Lower Rappahannock's not going to fix that, but it's certainly going to help. Basically, what you're talking about with the initial onset is if you look at the 20 working day period that you would have for November, you're going to pull out Thanksgiving and any bad weather days, we could be talking about a 15 to 18 day season, which when you look at the population of oysters there, it's not going to, I think anyone would agree, it's not a devastating season. quite the contrary, actually. And at the same time, it would offer some harvest area for the watermen, who at this time, as I say, the middle Rappahannock that's open, we're looking now at, that's really the market size oysters are really being depleted there. We can give that a break, move in this area, and then the commission could decide in December what to do from there as far as closing all of it, opening one portion or another, or whatever the case would be. So I'd be glad to answer any questions, but I appreciate the opportunity to present this proposal.
Any questions of Mr. Kellum? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Kellum, you propose to close the currently open Rappahannock hand scrape harvest area as part of your proposal. What's the purpose in doing that, and how long would you propose to keep that closed?
I would propose that be taken up in the second part of the question, be taken up at the December meeting when we generally would take up whether to increase that area's I think at the December meetings, normally when we took up, is that correct, extending the Rappahannock season. So I would propose in December to take a look at whether to do that. The reason for closing that, as I say, is, one, I don't think it's prudent to have both areas open at the same time, and secondly, it would be to decrease the amount of pressure on the market oysters that's there now. It's enough area in the second proposed lower Rappahannock opening that the boats could migrate there and basically would have more as much or more territory to work than what they have now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Travelstead, you've heard the proposal. Would you care to comment on that?
Well, these kind of things take some time to evaluate. I couldn't begin to comment, off the top of my head. I think Jim may have some information he can share with you, but without hearing from VIMS and others, it would be hard to give any recommendation at this point.
Commission, have any other questions or comments?
To anyone in general?
Anyone in general.
Mr. Wessett. Listening to Tommy then, is there a lot of difference in the densities of the harvest areas and the non-harvest areas?
Biologically, there's a lot of difference.
I know age structure is going to be different, but I'm talking about total abundance. How much difference is in total abundance?
Twice as much on the non-harvested as the harvested.
Wouldn't you expect it to be even higher in that if you were having survivability?
You would certainly, we want to see them just start growing and continue to grow. But we're dealing with a disease that's very, very potent. We've had, remembering the context of this slide, what Jack mentioned, we're back in like we were in the mid-90s and early 2000. And this is the area that we're talking about. The above the bridge there at Route 3 is where they've been working. And you can see that in that proposal, the majority of the areas that are good are included in the area that is proposed for opening. That's about 90% of the standing stock is in that area. This is what we see in the harvested area. And you got to look way over on the oysters per meter because that's the telling thing. And see, we had a spat set at Broken Bar in 2001, 2002, and that's what we lived off in 3, 4, and 5. And you can see that in the harvested area, you're talking about even at the peak of it, we were only around 2 or 3 per meter averaging. And we've slowly worked it down. Now we're down around 1.3 per meter. And along with working the area down, we've also changed the age structure. Obviously, they've been the most of the 3-inch orchards that have come into the harvest area are right at the 3-inch and a little bit bigger. In contrast, areas with no harvest, and just to go back to that one, it's important to note that we may be doing something right because we got a very good spat set this year.
What we want to see, we've got salinities back like they should be, up around 20 per meter in the harvested area, that, you know, we'll have again to work on down the road. Almost the same picture, obviously two big spat sets in 2001, 2002, and you can see in three as they began to come into the standing stock, and then they grew in 2004, but still we're only talking about three oysters per meter, and we've pretty much stayed right at 2.5 to 3 right through the high rainfall, and now we've gone into higher salinity. The disease reports that just got back today show that the disease is not that bad in these large oysters in the Rappahannock. They're not going to all die. And in fact, the bigger the oyster gets, we're actually seeing the disease intensity go down. And, you know, we would love to see 15 oysters, large oysters per meter. And you do in clusters, but when you average it over the whole area, it's still only around 3. But there is a massive difference in the size of the oyster between the harvested and not harvested. They're big, they're heavy, they're old. What we know about oysters is the fecundity gets bigger and bigger as they get bigger. It's not just a simple 2 inches twice 1 inch, it's exponential. And it's one of those areas where we would like to see more, but we see enough to know that they are probably contributing to the spawn that we're seeing upriver in the harvested area.
Another question along those lines with these two charts you put up. Evidently, the spat set was much greater, 3 or 4 times as great in the areas that were dredged compared to the areas that wasn't dredged. So it looks like if they are the contributing factor, why aren't they setting any spat where they're at?
Well, if we don't know very well about the flow of the river, but it looks like the net flow is upriver. So the spawn is being carried upriver. But the driving part of the mean that gives us the number of spat per meter is only in, you see Ferry Rock that's right there at the Route 3 bridge on the north side. From there, wrapping around the northern shore into the Coratomon has very high spat set. It's historically always had high spat sets. And we're maintaining that set. Now, if you go to the southern side of the river, it's the same as it is downriver. So it seems like the net flow is from somewhere bathing the larvae up the northern shore. But even if you look at that, when you compare it to the historical spat sets that I've seen listed for in the old, not real old, but I mean, when I first got here, it was normal to see 400 and 500 spat occasionally in dredge toes in this northern shore drumming ground that we have there. And now we're down around 180, 200. Still a lot for this river. But if you look at the old VIMS data, I mean, it used to be thousands there, like 1,000, 2,000 in on drumming ground. So we're still at very low levels. We're still at very critical levels. It's it would seem very likely that you're by harvesting in the short term that you're jeopardizing your 2008, 2009 and continuing the fishery.
I won't disagree with you, but I will say it looks just the opposite to me. Looks like me, the harvest areas in 2009 are going to have many more oysters in the non-harvest areas because you have such an extreme difference in the spat set.
Again, even if it is localized, one area.
Because everything you do is localized. You know, when you take something and say it's, for example, 3 oyster to the meter, you're taking into account that a lot of meters have 0 oysters because it's not sustainable bottom, and some areas may have as high as several hundred. Seaside. It won't be on Bayside, but it does get high on seaside.
So the areas that we survey, we only survey the actual areas that we are doing restoration on, doing the putting shell down, so it's all good bottom.
Any other comments? Mr. Robbins.
I'm sorry, Dr. McConaughey. Mr. Robbins and Dr. McConaughey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim, just a couple of questions. The proposal you just heard included a proposed closure of the current open area in the Rappahannock for a period of time, basically an undetermined period of time. Would you comment on that as to whether or not that might constitute some sort of equivalency in terms of conservation actions, or you know, we're talking about the proposal is for approximately 15 to 18 days of harvesting in the sanctuary area. Can you comment on what impact that might have biologically and whether or not the other action would help offset that? Or?
Well, several parts of that. The important thing to remember is that in this lower Rappahannock, there's not that much standing stock there to start with. On the areas that we survey, if you assume that we have 15 working days in that season we're talking about for November, and I think judging from what we saw in the James and Rappahannock, that we could easily have 50 boats working on that if the season opened. That's 750 boat days. If they caught 10 per boat per man, we would catch the entire standing stock that's there if they could do it, because there's not that much standing stock on those areas. So what harvesting with a dredge does is obviously the harvester is working on the best areas that he can find to do it as quickly as he can to make his day's work, which we understand, which is exactly counter to where we need to go with orchards, because you're going to the areas that have the best density, and oysters are stuck on the bottom. They can't move. Their males and females intermix with each other, and when they release sperm and egg into the water, their fertilization success is entirely dependent on how close the males and females are to each other. Once they get out this far from each other, it's zero. They have to be right next to each other. And so in the harvesting process, no matter what you try to do, you're always working against leaving these areas of the biggest density, and that's the areas that you concentrate on, and you leave the areas of low density, and they are biologically neutral. I mean, they contribute nothing to the spawning success, and it's a terribly difficult situation. It's terrible on industry. It's terrible that we have the disease, and that we can't get big numbers of orchards everywhere. But the fact for orchards are that they depend on closeness to one another in order to have fertilization success, and harvesting works counter to that and actually makes them less dense. And the only way that you can maintain the little density that we have is by having a complete sanctuary.
Dr. McConaughey?
Yeah, I just trying to, from what you said, are you saying that a high spat set that's in the open area is coming from the spawning in the lower part? Is that?
That's our best guess.
Okay, but we don't know where in that lower part.
What?
We don't know where in that lower part.
No.
There's no flow studies on this area.
Nope.
That we could see where.
Okay. Some of the rivers we have larval transport models, and we have some flow information. Generally thought that it's just net upwards for the Rappahannock, but don't know which side it contributes to.
So we don't know if the proposed area to be open is the source of the spat or not.
No, we don't.
And what's the minimum density for fertilization? Do we know?
Well, since orchards produce millions and millions per orchard, you can have two orchards sitting right beside each other and do a lot.
Well, yeah, I meant the distance between.
But they have to be 10 centimeters, and they're losing efficiency from there on out.
I think Mr. Kellum wanted to make a comment. Do you want to make one more comment? We'll move this along a little bit.
It's not too usual.
Come to the mic so we got you on record, sir, please. Thank you.
It's not too usual that I'm on the side arguing with Dr. West, and that's not something but one, when I really pulled this thing apart this weekend and really started looking at it, when you look at the standing stock numbers and the fact that the comment that you could clean them up in 15 days, if you look at the number of markets in that area and look at the number of markets that we just showed in the harvested area, and the fact that the harvested area has stayed close to limits now since September 1, and we still are, I mean, a guy still makes a day's work there. I'm not arguing that we've caught them all up. That's not why I'm saying close it. It's just I don't think it's prudent to have both areas open. I think it would be impossible to catch that up in a season, much less the 15-day period we're looking at. If you look at the stocks that were in Lower James last year and compare those to the harvest that we had, we left the Lower James last year harvesting my public records, oyster buyer records, the same thing the last day that we did in the beginning. And then we come back this year and it's all died to disease. Certainly, I think that we're susceptible to all these oysters dying to disease, but I don't argue the fact the conditions are right now for them not to die. But to think that we're going to clean that standing stock up in this short a period of time. Actually, when I came here today, the boats were working in the Temple Bay area, which is the south side of the river. That's where about 75% of the fleet was at today. You're talking about that fleet in one little area that continue to go back and make a day's work. Obviously, we're not going to go to an area that hadn't been touched for 10. The best I can tell from our records at our company, 1987 was the last year we saw any harvest in those areas. Now, if a boat goes there and can only catch two or three bushels, he can't make it at that. It's going to close itself. So I just really think from sediment reasons, this area hadn't been worked. A sample that I saw that I shouldn't have seen from that area, we've got toad eggs, which are water blisters on these oysters. The oysters that we're getting from the middle Rappahannock are the prettiest, I would argue, anywhere on the bay. They're clean, they're round, they're single. The spat set is obvious on the oysters where we've cleaned them up. There are obvious reasons why cleaning the bottom also in the process of harvesting in a managed fashion makes sense. But like I say, I just wanted to put the fact up that I just don't see how we could clean that area up if you look at the actual numbers and what we sustained in other harvest areas from the amount of markets that were there, how a 15 to 35-day season is going to affect that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I think we're at the junction there where we have several options. Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel is meeting. They are doing a good job. Everything is on the table as far as examination is concerned, and a lot of good science is going to come out of that. We have the request of the Twin River Watermen's Association and others to undertake a limited opening sometime in the month of December. And we have Mr. Kellum that's come before us with a well-thought-out proposal, but the item number 6 requires an emergency action by this commission. I, for one, before we throw it out, have a little difficulty. I understand that the industry is in dire need of oysters at the present time. I do understand that. I regret that the seasons of the other states that are suppliers of oysters have had to do what they've had to do, but I just have a little concern as I read the code pertaining to the emergency regulation. I'll read it again. If in an emergency, the adoption of a regulation is necessary for the immediate preservation of the public peace, health, safety, and welfare, and this is where it comes in, or the protection of the seafood industry, natural resources, and marine organisms, the commission may promulgate a regulation. I'm not so certain that we have reached that level of the burden of proof to adopt an emergency regulation in this matter. I'll just throw that out as something that's concerning to me a little bit. Otherwise, I'll leave it open to discussion for the commission, and we'll take whatever we're going to do and move along to the next item on the agenda. Mr. Bowden.
I'd also read the adoption of emergency regulation before you did, and it's a gray area. Preservation of the seafood industry would certainly qualify for that, but then you also have the natural resources, so, you know. I'd have a hard time deciding whether it was an emergency or not. I will give you that. But the original presentation was for maybe,
a public hearing next month in consideration at that time. I feel like if the place has been closed for 19 years and you're looking at a twofold increase, it hasn't been very successful. I would think if you were going to preserve something and really increase your chances of success in spawning, you would do it in areas of high density. So Jim called our attention that the places to the north and west in that river have very high densities. And Mr. Kellogg's suggestion was to close some of that area, or close all of the area, his suggestion was. I think somewhere along the line, there could be a compromise made. I don't believe you'll be able to open everything below the bridge, and I don't think you'll have to close everything above the bridge. But we're to the point now, and Mr. Kellogg made the statement that probably 10 to 12 market oysters is coming out of dredge full. I've dredged before. You're talking, I don't know how big a dredges you're using, but if you use, we used to use 36-inch dredges, you're probably talking 300 oysters. So you all might use a smaller dredge than that, but you're still talking less than 10%. So you're grinding the part I mentioned before. And if we could leave those in high densities, we have a tremendous spat set in certain areas up there, and evidently it's concentrated in certain areas. I believe that's the place that we ought to consider. And we ought to consider opening some of it. So along those lines, there's no further discussion. I would like to see us have a public hearing at our November meeting to discuss this, get everything out, let staff come back with some recommendations. Maybe the Blue Ribbon panel will have some recommendations, but I do want to caution one thing. I chaired the Finfish Committee for a lot of years, and we were an advisory group, and every recommendation we made was not taken verbatim. Just because we have a Blue Ribbon panel, we may not agree with everything they say, and we may very well agree with everything they say. We don't know that at this time.
Oh, debate's healthy.
So I think, you know, I move that we bring this to public hearing in the November meeting.
Jack, is his motion well-defined enough that you can do something with, or does he need to be more?
No, I think so. I think Mr. Kellum's laid out a very specific proposal. We could advertise that and then indicate that the commission would consider variations on that theme, if you will.
Okay, is there a second to the motion?
I second.
Second by Mr. Holland.
I'd like to put an amendment, if friendly amendment to that. I'd also like to open up the discussion for the Virginia tributaries of the Potomac River that were closed. We harvested last year.
Do you accept that, Mr. Bowden?
I will accept it. Really, there's been nobody to ask, but we're not doing an emergency regulation, so I think that would be fine to include it.
Okay. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Several points, I guess. Mr. Bowden commented that after 19 years of being closed, that the standing stock in that area has only increased twofold. And just as a commentary, I think that's a testimony to just the devastating and limiting effect that disease has had on the resource in the Rappahannock. I think we need to be very cautious in approaching the issue of opening the sanctuary, because as I understand the sanctuary model, it's really the centerpiece of our management strategy in the Rappahannock. And I think if we're going to propose opening them, we need to have in place an alternate strategy that's based on good analysis, and I think staff will investigate this proposal for technical merit and look at the different options and alternatives, I guess, that we might have for better managing the resource in that, or it may affirm. But I think this issue does need to be vetted through the Blue Ribbon panel, and I hope that will be taken up in the November discussion of that panel, because the use of sanctuaries generally, I think, needs broad review at a strategic level to see how that fits into our management plan, and whether or not they're working, or whether or not they need to be amended or modified, as Jack mentioned earlier. And I think based on Dr. McConaughey's questions and some of the concern that industry's raised, it's not clear entirely that the larval transport in this area can be assigned to the sanctuary. And it seems that it would make sense, but I think going forward, it would be helpful if we could get to the point that we had some larval transport studies done in that area. I don't know if that's feasible, but it seems like that would be a good research objective to have for the near future to try to get a handle.
May not be able to do it in the next 30 days.
No, I understand that, but I think as we evaluate sanctuaries, and specifically this Rappahannock sanctuary that we've been asked to open, I think every year for the last 4 years, that we need to have a little bit more information on what the net larval transport is in that area, so we can make an informed decision.
To Jack's credit, even before this issue was heard by this commission today, Jack serves as my proxy when I'm not able to attend that meeting. And the issue of sanctuaries we've been discussing for some time, so that is on the radar screen, and we're there. So there's any further discussion on Ms. Fox?
Mr. Callum has made a proposal which seems to me to be an intelligent proposal, but I would hope that the staff would also use some flexibility in analyzing the size of the area that Mr. Callum proposes, and maybe perhaps a line from Mosquito Point to somewhere south. I don't know. I would not want to limit staff to just an up or down on what Mr. Callum proposed.
I think the way that it will be worded and advertised, what Mr. Callum has proposed, will allow flexibility, and that will include decreasing the size of what he's asked for. Staff determines it to be in the best interest of the fishery. Dr. McConaughey?
On some of these larval transport issues, I would hope that Dr. Mann will be here to kind of address some of those issues.
I would hope that every stakeholder that has a concern and that has had a concern will be here for that meeting. Dr. McConaughey, I share your concern, and they will certainly be afforded advance notice. Motion's been made, seconded. Motion made by Mr. Bowden, seconded by Mr. Holland. The friendly amendment accepted. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Chair votes aye. Jack, got directive? To all involved, we'll do the very best that we can to provide the best information that we can in a short period of time. We'll see how it comes out. Thank you for your comments. Any further public comment? Thank you, Dr. Wilson. Any further public comment?
You want that?
Come forward. Yes, ma'am.
My name is Maria. Good evening, Michigan.
That's good evening, ma'am. That's the light. The other one's a microphone.
Okay, thank you.
It confuses everybody.
Well, I'm up here at your mercy, asking you and pleading with you for our oyster ground, because oysters was our big resources, putting food on our table, but clothes on our back.
Yes, ma'am.
And that was our only resources for oysters. I can recall when my husband and my both parents was going out to Austin. In the wintertime, it was so cold that they had to put on gloves, and the gloves would be hanging from icicles because it was so cold, and they also had to put a newspaper in their shoes for to keep warm. And another thing, the oysterman had to the coupon destroyed the oysters, and therefore the coupon, the oysterman the oysters is back now, bigger than ever. And we are so sorry that the oysters went away, but now they are so back. The oysterman had to find resources while the keeper was, had to go to the shipyard, to the Navy Yard, and to the meat plant for to have food and clothes on our back. But we are so thankful that God made it possible for to send the oysters back. And therefore, we are at your mercy, asking for our oyster grant.
Thank you, Ms. Hill.
In addition to what my mom is...
State your name for the record, please.
Sorry. My mother is Marie Hill, and my name is Mary Hill. And one of the requests and appeal at your mercy that my mother was asking was in regards to the oyster ground application or the oyster ground lease application that we had submitted. And there was an extension given, and I'm grateful for your consideration allowing that extension, which was paid on the 26th. And there was an extension which I misinterpreted that was, under my impression, was included in one extension, and that was my brother, right, Clyde Hill, which was included as a part of what I had paid on the 26th. But my understanding was that extension had expired on the 19th.
I think, Ms. Hill, before you go any further, there are some extenuating circumstances that I don't believe would be appropriate to address in public forum. I would like for you to get with Mr. Stagg and Ms. McCroskey pertaining to your discussion with them so they can discuss with you some of the issues that you're relating to, because I really don't think it's appropriate in the best interest of either you nor the Commonwealth of Virginia to discuss this matter in open forum at this time.
Okay.
You speak with her.
Okay.
And I think, in all honesty, and I'm speaking from my heart, the best thing for you to do is speak with them so that they can provide you an update on that transaction.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Have a good. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ms. Hill.
Thank you.